Yesterday I introduced a method, a technique of the cultivation of loving-kindness using the phrases, may I be well, happy, peaceful, prosperous, may no harm come to me, may no difficulties come to me, may no problems come to me. May I always meet with spiritual success. May I have the patience, courage, understanding, and determination to meet and overcome inevitable difficulties, problems, and failures in life. And of course, and then using those same phrases to generate that recollection of love and kindness towards parents, teachers, family, friends, those who are unfriendly, and generating out to all living beings. I think the use of phrases is it's a helpful reminder to try to direct attention to a particular feeling, because that's the object of meditation in the loving kindness practice is the feeling of loving kindness, the actual kind of a feeling, an emotional tone within the heart, and that is what one is trying to both generate as well as to support and sustain. And then that's also, as one directs attention, then it's sort of like trying to enter into and abide in that feeling, and allowing it to establish itself. And I think also it's quite important in terms of the cultivation of loving-kindness, that the what one calls the metta, nimitta, the sign of, or the object of loving-kindness, it's like finding a place where that feeling of metta begins to establish itself, and then protecting it, and then using those different phrases to try to support, nurture, hold in a skillful way, so that it is able to grow and expand. And when we say, sometimes it's a problem with language, in the sense, okay, directing attention to parents, teachers. It isn't like sort of taking that loving kindness and beaming it off there, beaming it off this way, sending it off, shooting it out, radiating all that. It's much more the sense of it's like one begins with a little spark or a little, it's like allowing the heart to be a vessel for loving kindness, and then what one does is then expand that vessel expand that sphere of loving kindness so that it includes parents, it includes family, teachers, friends, and ultimately all living beings. So it's like a or it's establishing that base of loving kindness, that metta nimitta, and stabilizing it, nurturing it, and then inviting parents, teachers, friends into that sphere, you know, allowing them to come into that sphere, including them within that sphere, so that the base of loving kindness is right here, within this body, this mind, in this present moment. This is where the base of loving kindness is, so that, and then allowing that to include, or as I say, inviting in, you're like the expanding that so that it's not excluding anything, and then allowing those other beings to be included in that sphere of loving kindness. So it's a different approach, and I think it's in terms of stabilizing the concentration and stabilizing the and using it as a concentration technique, as a meditation that provides a solid anchor within the heart. It's quite important that it, that shift of perspective is, it's like that, having that stable vessel of loving kindness that is then expanding and allowing to include all these other elements of beings who we associate with. And but it's never sort of divorced or separated from the loving kindness that is established toward oneself, or is, and that is the base that you're always returning to, relying on, depending on, is that loving kindness that is, you know, may I be well, happy, peaceful, prosperous. May no harm come to me. May no difficulties come to me. May no problems come to me. May I always meet with spiritual success. May I have the patience, courage, understanding, and determination to meet and overcome inevitable difficulties, problems, and failures in life. And it's sort of that, it's always grounded in that. Respect, kindness, well-wishing toward oneself. And that's not selfish. That it's the most practical. It's a reality to be able to look after oneself so that one has the resources to be able to be a support for others. Today I'd like to continue, over these days I'll probably introduce a few different kind of methodologies or options in what kind of phraseology, what rings, what feels like it's meaningful for us. And And I'll use the today we'll address the Buddha's words on loving kindness, which is one of the chants that we do. It's probably the most famous. It's on page 28. It's probably the most famous expression of loving kindness that the Buddha taught, how the Buddha taught. And say, where is that formula of directing loving kindness towards oneself, parents, teachers, friends, that whole structure? That's probably the most common, not that particular phraseology, but that structure is probably the most common. But this is probably the most well known, and when in the suttas and in the in the Pali language, the scriptural language, I've heard a couple different Pali scholars, Bhikkhu Bodhi, Bhante Gunaratana, who are fluent in Pali, say this is the most beautiful discourse in terms of the language is there's not a spare word anywhere. It's all perfect. Because trying to get things into English, you try your best, and I think it's you know, people are interested to there's probably many different translations. That's the beauty of the internet. You can go to the internet and find half a dozen translations of the Karaniya Metta Sutta. I think one of the striking things of this is, say, the Buddha's most well-known discourse on loving-kindness, and it's probably more than a third of the way through the sutta before the Buddha even mentions loving-kindness. And I think, which is great, you know, in the sense of, yeah, this is the loving-kindness is to be cultivated, but this is what should be done to get there. You know, one needs to be skilled in goodness and knowing the path of peace. If one to be able, let them be able and upright. The straightforward and gentle in speech, sort of. It's not just a. This is not just a mental phenomena. That you can, let's say, grab a feeling of loving kindness out of the ether of one's mental states and hold on to it. No, it arises out of one's actions and speech. This is the ground that we need to be attending to. That sense of actions being able and upright, one's speech being straightforward, direct, that when we do the chanting of the recollection of the Sangha, there's the same word there as uchu, it's a sort of direct, straight. And practicing sort of directly, but it's also is also means sort of straight, upright. The And in speech, so being straightforward, being direct, but also being gentle. It's important for our speech to be direct and straight, but it also one needs to have a gentleness in how one speaks. There's an idiom in the Pali language, in the scriptural language, attacking each other with verbal daggers. it's very vivid. there's another one of the same thing. Someone is born with an axe in their mouth. Speech can be just as harsh and cutting and devastating as actions. So it's important to be having that sense of gentleness in speech, as well as being straightforward. But the quality of humble and not conceited, that sense of really humility. There's a softness and a harmonious quality arises in the human condition when somebody is, when they have humility and not carrying around conceits of their importance and worth. contented and easily satisfied. Similarly, with that in terms of being able to harmonize, to blend in with each other in the human community, that sense of contentment and easily satisfied is one that allows us to blend with each other if we're discontent and difficult to satisfy constant demands, whether it's material or emotional, then there's you're always sort of walking on pins and needles. It's difficult to get along. And the again an idiom from the scriptural language, say blending like milk and water, the Buddha goes to visit. And there's a couple of different discourses, and one comes to mind immediately where he visits. He's actually left the community because he's got fed up with them. They were not getting on, and he went to a forest where a few monks were living there, and one was his cousin, Anuruddha, along with a few other monks, a couple other monks, and the Buddha arrives and he asks them, are you living harmoniously? Are you living like blending like milk and water? And that's an image that is that's used, and so that sense that contentment and being contented and easily satisfied is a source of sort of inner well-being as well as a social well-being. unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, just not having too many things that is on one's plate, not taking on more than one can sanely handle. Again, living in simple ways. These are ways that that allow us to have an ease within the heart that can then be translated into a cultivation of say a mature emotion like loving kindness. Because peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, these are all qualities of to be reminding ourselves of, a sense of bringing into our day-to-day life a quality of calm and discernment, really trying to make decisions according to, not according to our preferences or ideals, but they're really saying, well, what's actually skillful, what's wholesome, what's beneficial, what's not beneficial, what's not skillful. And those are not being either driven by one's own biases or the biases of the society, the people around, but sort of saying, well, what is skillful, what is really beneficial. And the way the Buddha defines it, that which is skillful is that which inherently leads to, say, happiness, peace, and a freedom from defilements, freedom from obscurations. And what is, say, unskillful is sort of its opposite, that which is associated with suffering, with dukkha, that is, it's agitated, unstill, and then having associated with greed, hatred, and delusion. And that's sometimes really helpful for making decisions, so rather than, do I like it, do I don't like it, does this person, what is that person going to think, what's the popular notion within this particular group of people or society. So, well, no, this, the Buddha has laid it out quite clearly, and it's an intrinsic, there's an intrinsic well-being that comes from that when we align ourselves with the skillful. So not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. If we're going to take into account and worry about what somebody's going to think, then it's sort of, take the standards of somebody who one really upholds as, oh, that's a wise being. Use that as a sounding board. Then the Buddha formulates this wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease. And the Pali or the scriptural language is Sukhi no va kemi no hontu, sabbe satta bhavantu sukhitata. And say, so sukhi no, is like with happy, with gladness, with well being. And may they be happy, may they experience well being. And Kemino, which is safety, security, stability, freedom from a some any kind of threat. I'm not. Sambe satam bhavantu sukhitattha. May all beings bring into being this quality of happiness and well-being. May they be at ease. And then from there, then by establishing that wish or that thought, that aspiration, then the Buddha encourages us to expand that. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, so then the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, so that whether they're weak or strong is not just a physical attribute, it's also could be a social attribute. Sort of powerful beings in, or they you're disadvantaged, and it's not just your sort of your 98-pound weakling and the sort of Mr. Universe sort of thing. It's much more around any manifestation of physical, social, emotional, whether they're weak or strong, every being is worthy of that that wish that may they be at ease, because whether one's weak or strong, they're suffering. That's the whether one is it's like Ajahn Chah saying poor people suffer like poor people and rich people suffer like rich people, intelligent people suffer like intelligent people and not so intelligent people suffer like not so intelligent people, people who are. That's the universal leveler we all suffer. I remember Ajahn Chah saying one time that. And teasing us as Westerners, because generally as Westerners we had far more education than most of the Thai monks who went to study and train and ordain with Ajahn Chah, and then, of course, as he got more well known, and there were more more Central Thai people, Bangkok Thais coming to, who were well educated also. But it was always a source of amusement to him, because he said, "Well, people go and study and they get a bachelor's degree." He says, "Yeah, but their defilements got a bachelor's degree as well." and then they're defilements. Oh. and then they carry on and get a master's degree. Their defilements have got a master's degree along with that. And they say, "Well, this isn't satisfying." So they, continue and get my doctorate. And he says, "But then your defilements get a PhD as well." So they become more. So that it's just the nature of beings immersed in greed, hatred, and delusion without liberating insight. Yes, we all suffer. So that generating of loving kindness is you know, cutting across the board, recognizing that another thing that Ajahn Chah said, I can't resist. Again, teasing us as Westerners, because we've come from affluent society, have education, and you say, yeah, well, you Westerners have, you know, affluence and education. Why is that? Yeah, look at the vultures. You know, they fly really high. Look what they come down and eat. It's always a source of amusement. So that sense of spreading loving kindness to all living beings, the seen and the unseen, one realizes again that even if one doesn't see them, doesn't know them on a personal level, you know that all beings are worthy of and would respond to that wish for loving kindness, that wish for happiness, to live in safety and happiness. Whether they're living near or far away, those born and to be born, and that's the in the Pali, it's the Sambhavesiva, sort of those seeking birth, those beings that are seeking birth. They won't, they don't know what they're in for. I think, boy, I can't wait to get born so I can they get bored of something, whatever realm they're in, and say, I want to be reborn. Of course, that's the this cycle goes around and around. Having that real deep sense of kindness and compassion towards all beings. And that, may all beings be at ease. Sambhe santa sukhita hontu. May they. Sambhe santa bhavantu sukhita ta. May they bring into being, and may all beings bring into being that happiness. And then it comes back into, again, how we live with each other, in terms of living with loving kindness. Let none deceive another. Just as this commitment to real kind of honesty and straightforwardness in our dealings with each other, and again recognizing that is how beings can be, have a sense of feeling safety and happiness is. Having a sense of trust, and having that sense of trust with each other, so to let none deceive another, to just really be very committed to that which is true, and trying to be as upfront and clear with each other as possible. And it's also good to qualify that and bring it back to that sense of being gentle in speech as well. Because sometimes we can take that as an ideal and forget the effect that it's actually going to have. And it's where skillfulness is really really important in how we deal with each other. Or despise any being in any state. A very human tendency to lift oneself up by putting somebody else down, and despise is a very strong word, but that sense of just looking down on somebody or blowing them off or just not disregarding them in some way, as human beings, we easily do that because there's a sense of, being criticizing them or being able to put them down, that it lifts oneself up a bit, and that it's just not very beautiful. It's not a beautiful mental state. And it was one of the things that when I went to Thailand and ordained as a Buddhist monk, I was traveling around the world for about a year, then I ordained, and after being a monk for about 16 years, it was 16 years before I went back to Canada for the first time and came back to North America for a visit. And after being in a monastery environment, being in a rural culture that is in monasteries in the northeast of Thailand, which it's quite a gentle culture. I found it quite painful the how people spoke and talked and referred to each other, put each other down, or being exposed to media, and sort of just how there's this making fun of, criticizing, putting down, sarcasm, critical comments, sort of snide comments. It's very. I found it very painful. So it's ordinary. It's very ordinary. But it wasn't. I don't think my family was more egregious than anybody else, but they're, in fact, they're pretty good. But it's just is sort of within the culture. There's this I think it's important to become very conscious of that, so that one isn't drawn into it, not to be drawn into that sense of putting anybody down in any way. It's just the criticisms or making fun of or sarcasm. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. So that sense of really protecting the thoughts of loving kindness and well wishing, or at least neutrality. And then the phrase, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, That is, say, the Buddha very consciously uses the image of the mother, who is, as I said, the archetypal image of the mother is the identification with the child. And if it's her only child, then there's that constant sense of well-wishing. And even if a mother is not right there with the child, the antennae are out, and there's the concern for the child. This slightest sound pulls the mother back to check and make sure that the child is okay, and that's so the image is very apt. And then the Buddha saying, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. And that sense of in the same way that the mother doesn't think of herself, the first thought is to the child. In the same way, we have that sort of that boundless quality where we're not thinking of ourselves anymore, setting ourselves aside, and establishing that quality of cherishing all living beings. And that the radiating of kindness, allowing those thoughts and feelings of kindness, of metta, to permeate, sort of spreading upwards to the skies, downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. So that sense of unobstructed radiating, not choosing, sort of, well, I'll radiate in sort of upwards, downwards, out in all directions, everywhere except for that person. there's no way. It's not getting into that limitation. And then I think this sort of emphasizes that sense of freed from hatred and ill will, that that basis of loving kindness is that abiding in non-aversion. It's not being trapped by the negativity, the aversion, the ill will, the irritation. And I think it's important to recognize that thoughts may come up in the mind, some irritation, but thoughts are they're as long as one doesn't feed them, nurture them, support them, they're just a thought. Or there's a memory, or there's a perception. And as long as we don't invest in it, believe in it, support it, then it doesn't have a landing place. It doesn't have a place to establish itself. So that as long as one doesn't identify with it, then it ceases. So that, the nature of the human mind is such that, we have a whole bank of experience, both internal for ourselves, external from the society, the impingement, the whatnot, and all of those can, you know, pop up in the mind as thoughts, because that's what a mind is for, is to sort of provide those things. But as a, say, a meditator, or a cultivator, we have to use the discernment to say, well, what am I going to invest in? What am I going to put my energy in? And that's where karma is created. So if you, whether the mental karma of investing in thoughts of ill will, aversion, greed, or investing the mental karma into, say, renunciation, loving kindness, compassion. One's making that choice. That's the karma that we're creating. So that the... Because sometimes people will say, we kind of upset, devastated, and you know, say, oh, I had this thought, terrible thought of aversion. Well, did you do anything? Yes. No. Well, don't make a problem out of it. You know, they pop up in the same way that you know, there's all sorts of things happening in the world around us. You know, what do we pay attention to? Where do we allow our attention to rest and gather momentum? So that to that abiding in loving kindness is a conscious choice that we make, both for ourselves and and it affects others. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, so this is the four postures of if we're not doing one, then we're doing the other, and this is sort of 24/7. So this is our opportunity for practice, whether we're sitting, lying down, walking, standing. Of course, free from drowsiness. Yeah. It helps to not let the mind get clouded. It helps a lot that, and it isn't just sort of drowsiness, sleepiness, but the kind of drowsiness, dopiness that can just come from going on automatic pilot. We can drowse through all sorts of interaction, all sorts of activities. That too, one should sustain this recollection. And the word that's used in the sutta itself is sati. It's to sustain this mindfulness, to sustain this awareness, to sustain this recollection. This is a sublime abiding. So that as we review, this is a chant that particularly many of the people that are associated with the monasteries, people know it by heart, and it's helpful to have these chants available where you chant it and then pick out, well, what are some phrases that resonate? And things will resonate differently at different times. But to having a phrase or a whole series of phrases that help remind one. I know when during the time that I was on sabbatical, it's a couple of years ago now, in Thailand, I was living on my own, and the I use those phrases that I introduced yesterday a lot, and then I use something that really struck a chord with me was the it wasn't it's that wishing and gladness and safety, may all beings be at ease, and both because I chanted in Pali all the time, and the Pali is meaningful to me as well, so alternate back and forth. I would walk alms round, and that would be the mantra. Not just sort of repeating it as quick as I could do it, but it's sort of just planting that seed and carrying that through, planting that seed, carrying it through, that generating of love and kindness. I found it very fruitful. So to take some of these phrases, these recollections, and experiment with them, work with them, see what happens.